The medium is the message, body makes a dance. Love is the product, the joke is in, the joke is in, the joke is in your face.
I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show. Welcome once again to the Are You Serious Show, a production of MondoGlobo.net. And how could Jesus rise from the dead if he never slid out of the womb? We're going to be talking to Brian Fleming today, the director of the film The God Who Wasn't There, about his plan to bring down Easter. So clutch your rosaries and get ready for a great show. And we are here with Jeff Deal, with Steve Robles, and with Diana Brown. And Diana Brown has something she wants to tell us about, I think. She's aching to tell us.
I'm kind of excited. I have to say the old animal song, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, has been going through my head all day because apparently Judas Iscariot, the guy, you know, the biblical bad guy, he was actually a misunderstood martyr. And the reason I know this is
kind of like me.
Exactly. For those of you out there who are wondering about the rebel Jeff Deal, and, well, he's just misunderstood. Don't take old man Deal the wrong way. But I digress. Apparently, the National Geographic revealed an ancient manuscript which has been dubbed the Gospel of Judas. And so it's going to clear Judas's very bad name. Because most Christians know Judas as the villain of the Bible who betrayed Christ with a kiss. Well, this manuscript contradicts Judas's reputation as a traitor. Although if Jesus never existed, how could he have been betrayed?
Well, what kind of kiss was it?
I think the most important thing is to think of the spirit in which the kiss was given. And according to the Gospel of Judas, which is written in an ancient Egyptian Coptic script, it has some stunning items in it. For one thing, Judas was asked, according to this manuscript, by Jesus to sacrifice him. He said, "Sacrifice the man that clothes me." In other words, bring about Jesus' death to accomplish this.
I think we're looking at an S&M relationship here. I think what he was betrayed by a blowjob, actually. We're talking about
Judas was just like a sick fanboy that got into a like dark scene.
I think
Jesus forgot the safe word.
What happens to Judas Priest now? That's what I want to know.
Dude.
Stephen Colbert has been trying to warn us about the war against Easter, and our guest, Brian Fleming, is bringing it on. Fleming is the director of the breakout hit film, The God Who Wasn't There. This film makes the case that Jesus Christ never lived. He's pure fiction, and it's currently the top-selling DVD on Amazon. And welcome, Brian.
Thank you. So, I should say it's a top-selling documentary on Amazon, not
among all. Oh, yeah, top-selling documentary DVD on Amazon. I always get something wrong, but that's because
I wish it were the number one DVD.
That's because I'm not blessed. But anyway, you must hate chocolate eggs, I guess. How are we going to overthrow the Easter Bunny by this Sunday? What's the plan, man?
Well, the plan is to hide copies of the movie, The God Who Wasn't There, in Christian churches between now and Easter, and also hide other items.
Excellent.
Cool. So you have an army of people. I remember the Crowleyites used to sneak Crowleyite pamphlets into Led Zeppelin album covers, actually. Yeah. So you have lots of people out there getting ready to do this?
Yeah, about 5 missions were completed today. They just started today, Palm Sunday.
Bless you, brother.
And I did a mission myself at Cathedral of Our Lady of the Angels the Catholic Mass today in downtown L.A.
Nice.
Do you expect any trouble with the guys handing out the Jack Chick tracks? Like maybe they'll see you handing that out. There'll be some violent confrontation between, you know, the forces of the forces of Chick evil.
They hate Catholic-y stuff like that, though, don't they? The fundamentalists, don't they hate Easter and
pagans,
all that type of pagan rituals?
Oh, I'm sure Jack Chick thinks that all Catholics are going to hell.
Yeah. Which I always say it's only the ones that fuck boys.
Actually, they're going to be fine. the Catholic Church, they're going to be just fine. Yeah. They'll be doing that to little boys in heaven for the rest of eternity.
Well, why call it heaven if you can't fuck little boys?
Exactly.
There's a special spot.
I think the Pope said that the other day.
Yes, he did. After a few Hail Marys.
Just in a much thicker accent.
So, anyway, you used to be a fundamentalist minister, and why did you stray from the flock, my son?
I used to be a fundamentalist Christian. I was never a minister, although, like everyone else, I'm a member of the Universal Life Church, so I'm a minister in that. But I've never been a real minister. I went to a fundamentalist Christian school called Village Christian School in Sun Valley, California, and that's where I kind of got the doctrine pounded into my head every day of my life. It was then that I was a fundamentalist Christian. And once I got out of that school, I started to think for myself a little bit more and learn about science, and going to college especially kind of opened my eyes to the absolutely false things that I was going around believing were true. And I gradually became an atheist, just deduced my way and learned my way to atheism.
Did you meet a lot of scary people in your days as a fundamentalist? Do you have some tweaked out stories to tell? Or were people just generally pretty nice, but, you know,
misguided? Some of the students at the school were pretty, I mean, I would not exactly say I was not one of them.
Did you go on campaigns to save people?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
I'm sorry, did you go out on campaigns to neighborhoods and preach the word and convert people? Were you out doing that?
No, I didn't, but that was certainly done. I have never really had the nerve to witness. I practiced it because they would take us out in the playground and we would practice witnessing to each other, and then we were supposed to do what we practiced, you know, with people in our lives, especially Jews. And I had Jewish friends, and every time I visited them at their house, I was just racked with guilt because I wasn't witnessing to them, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it because something felt wrong about telling them that, you know.
Did these people have horns?
Jews are going to hell.
You left us to rot in hell, you mean?
Right, so basically you couldn't get enough of the doctrine in of your own church to witness, but you got enough of the Jewish doctrine in to feel guilty.
I guess they won.
So. Worst of both worlds, I guess.
Did you keep your foreskin?
I don't know.
No, I did not, like most I think men born at the time I was.
Yeah. Can we get pictures for the blog?
There you are. That's Blag asking for pictures for the blog. Tell us about your film, The God Who Wasn't There. Basically, Jesus was never born. What's the evidence that he was never born?
But it's really
how do you
more,
prove a negative?
Yeah, it's really actually, there's a more positive case to be made, and that is that the early Christians, the very first Christians, did not believe in a human Jesus. And it took decades before they started adding history into their writings and creating this Jesus who wasn't just this mythical God, like most gods at the time were, but was in fact a man who walked around on earth. So if you look at the beginning of early Christianity, for at least 40 years there was no human Christ, and nobody was mentioning Bethlehem or Jerusalem as a place where he was crucified, or a pont, basically nothing that you and I would call the story of Jesus were they telling, except for that he was a savior who lived up in another realm and had died and had risen up back up to his father. All of this, of course, taking place in an upper realm, not down on earth. And then it took a while before they started adding in bit by bit, this historical detail and that historical detail. And that just doesn't track with Jesus having been a real person.
And apparently this exact story had been told many times before. Is that right? There have been various versions that are very close to being exactly the same?
Yeah, there were versions of the story both before the time that Christianity started, and especially right at the time Christianity started, and just before. The story of a dying and rising Savior is probably the oldest story in the world. We don't know, but I would guess it is. That's been told many times. But there were specifically other gods who were remarkably like Jesus in the time preceding the invention of Jesus. There was the Attis cult and the Mithras cult, and they had saviors who died, stayed dead 3 days, then rose up to their fathers to sit with their fathers as the eternal judge of mankind. And it's pretty clear that's where the Jesus story came from.
On your site, there's a comparison of your film. I don't maybe you made the comparison. I don't remember, but there's Bowling for Columbine and Super Size Me. The idea is that this film could do to Christianity what Super Size Me did for hamburgers or McDonald's and so forth. And I wonder if it gets widely distributed. Can you imagine like Christian fundamentalists running into the streets and rioting like with the with the cartoons in the Muslim world, how rabid has the response been so far, and how rabid can you imagine it become? Maybe you can get crucified.
And you used to be one of them. You must be their worst enemy.
That's right.
Their worst nightmare come true.
Maybe they won't riot. They'll just kill him. Right. Just be done.
Well, it's so far the strategy of most Christian groups who have commented about the movie to the press, but haven't really made a big deal out of it, is to hope that it just goes away.
Right.
And so what I'm doing is doing my best to make sure it doesn't go away and actually bringing it to their churches and having free, I released theatrical rights so anybody can hold a screening and not pay me any money, that you can put on a screening and charge admission and, you know, have everyone in your neighborhood come see it.
I love that the fundamentalists can ostensibly raise money for their church by screening your film. That's beautiful.
Exactly. I'm really looking forward to the first one of those.
I think it's very important that you get a Jewish publicist.
Do you have a...
So far, the strategy's been to ignore the film, but that's starting not to work because it's actually more popular now than it ever has been, and it was released theatrically last May and on DVD last August. So it's very much gaining steam, and I think pretty soon I'll see a lot more backlash, especially against the war on Easter. If you look at what we're about to do, it's going to be pretty provocative.
All right. Well, you've been promising to reveal this. I mean, it's coming right up, isn't it? It's a week from today?
A week from today, yeah.
Actually, when people are listening to this show, it'll be more like 5 days from today. But,
and the first maneuvers have actually begun this week, right?
Is there more to this plan? Are there some secrets that can be revealed for the first time?
Yeah, I'm starting to actually reveal them a little early because Christians have found out about it and they're starting to discover what we've got going on a little message board. So it's kind of being pushed out into the open a little sooner than I planned, which doesn't really matter to me. But the URL to find out about the War on Easter is waronEaster.org. And there you can see what the War on Easter is and how we're conducting it, and most important, how you can participate. You can win a free DVD of the movie by doing one of these missions as an operative to plant material about the God who wasn't there and about other things in the movie, The God Who Wasn't There, in Christian churches.
Do you have anybody going on a mission that includes like filming somebody trying to film somebody actually finding the DVD?
We're hoping to get that. Yeah, nobody's managed to get that just yet. Some people are hiding little flyers. We have you can see them on waroneaster.org, but the flyers say things like, "Here's a fun game. Ask your mom or dad, is the Easter Bunny real? Now ask them, is Santa Claus real? Now ask, is Jesus real? And remember this for the rest of your life. The answers to these three questions will always be the same." And it's targeted toward kids with little cartoons on it. And people are putting those into plastic eggs and hiding them among eggs at Easter egg hunts so they're discovered by Christian children.
Look, it doesn't bother me that you're trying to debunk Jesus, okay? That's fine. And it doesn't bother me that you hate the Easter Bunny. But I'm not going to sit here and listen to you talk about Santa.
Yeah, you got to draw the line somewhere. You know?
Or the tooth fairy.
How did Santa get into this?
That's right. How come you're dragging Santa into this?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you, as a godless heathen, enjoy Cadbury eggs.
I think I've had them and I enjoy them. I'm not a particular aficionado.
And you don't feel guilty about that? You don't think you're going to go to
not
hell
liking
for,
Cadbury.
Yeah, for talking shit about Jesus and then eating Cadbury eggs?
Oh, you think, am I a hypocrite? Maybe I am. I guess if Easter's about chocolate and I'm declaring war on Easter, I'm kind of a hypocrite, I guess.
Yeah, see, I can tolerate the Jesus talk, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm just fuming about Santa, man. I mean, I think you're really pushing it with that. And
well,
you know.
I'm hoping to reach out and have a dialogue with the Santa believers, and maybe we can come to an understanding.
It's a coalition.
I think it would be a good way to bring people on over
there,
to your side.
Is there
the
any
Kringle code. Is there, that'll be your next bud.
Is there any evidence that Santa wasn't really born?
Actually, the thing is that Santa is more real than Jesus is.
Yes, he actually is. Very substantial.
An actual saint. And, in fact, I saw statue the same when I recently visited Amsterdam, because he's the patron saint, I guess, of Holland or of Amsterdam, but that's where the myth originated. And so Santa is actually far more real than Jesus, because it was a real human who started the Santa legend.
And yet it was a saint, so...
It's more fun, too.
Pile
it's
on
much,
the irony.
Much nicer myth. I mean, guy going around giving away stuff. As
in Germany, they have the anti-Santa. Have you heard of this? Krampus? It's like they have the two of them go out together. I'm not kidding about this, actually. They have their Saint Nick, and then there's Krampus, and Krampus is like the black Santa.
Does he, like, steal everything back?
Yeah, he hurts kids that were bad, you know what I mean? Like, they have the evil Santa.
Well, Santa himself is a scary fuck. He wears, like, an animal skin that's bloody, you know? That's where the whole red Santa suit came from, is this
idea
of this guy. Yeah, with an inside-out animal skin that was still bleeding on his back. But a jolly... Holly man, anyway.
Oh, ho, ho. Yeah. I guess I would like to ask you, it seems that you're calling for an atheist activism movement, and so you believe that we could make a difference here if enough people got on board.
Oh, definitely. I think that there is an atheist activism movement, and I'm trying to contribute to it as much as I can. I think that it's a gradual realization among atheists that just sitting at home not believing and watching the world go to hell isn't really a very viable strategy.
And being kind of politically correct of not wanting to talk to people about the religion because it's impolite.
Exactly. Religious tolerance really has to go out the window if religious tolerance means we let people talk baby talk in public and get elected as politicians who control our policy. You know, if that's religious tolerance, we can't really be tolerant of that because it's just too dangerous.
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about really is... You're talking about a stifled discourse, basically, that
right.
you shouldn't, if somebody says something that sounds completely ridiculous, if it's their religious thought, then you shouldn't challenge it.
Well, this was a problem that I had with my wife. I was an atheist, she was an agnostic, and we couldn't figure out which religion not to bring the kids up.
So what would you say to agnostics listening out there?
I'm an agnostic, and I say stand up for your disbeliefs.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, I'm a pure atheist. I'm sorry.
Huh?
Please go
I think
on.
An agnostic is really just an atheist who hasn't thought about it enough yet.
Right, yeah, they seem like they're hedging their bet.
Really is,
is this like Lorca, indifference is the devil's armchair?
Yeah, I think...
Now that is obscure.
Yeah.
How many of our listeners are going to get that one?
As an agnostic, I think I can support atheism, but I don't want to go to hell for it.
Well, we're going to burn in hell with some demonic music for a few minutes, and then we'll be right back with Brian Fleming.
Are you serious? Inside the lies of statues in their minds.
This is religion. Jesus Christ. This is Bible. One Bible. This is sin. In eternal him. This is what they've done. This is your religion. The apostles were 11. Now there's a son in
continue on this agnosticism versus atheism deal, because I mean the reason I'm an agnostic, and I mean, it all depends, of course, the linguistic construction of God and what you consider God to be, but I just don't assume that as a human being I have the equipment, the nervous system and the brain to be quite certain about everything that is going on. Do you feel that? To me, I mean, atheism is a belief system, just like belief is. It's,
I would disagree with that. I don't think that atheism is a belief system. It's simply, as Sam Harris puts it, it's the inability to be unreasonable. Basically everyone is an atheist. Religious people are just atheists about every other god except their own. So even a Christian is just one God away from me. I don't believe in Zeus, and I don't believe in Poseidon. But the Christian is also an atheist with regard to Zeus and an atheist with regard to Poseidon. The Christian just has selected one of those books of mythology, pulled it down, and said, this one's real. As an atheist, all I've done is simply not do that. I still love the mythology and appreciate it as mythology. I just haven't pulled one down and said, no, this book, even though there's no evidence for it, describes the truth as it really is in reality.
But that still leaves at least a possibility that you might discover something that could. The problem with atheism that I have is just like, are you saying it is kind of a belief in it? And when you talk about, you know, being unreasonable, it's almost unreasonable to not allow for anything like supernatural or anything beyond what we see day to day in our, you know, what we perceive to be our physical reality.
Right. You could say there's no evidence for it yet.
Particularly about a God, though. I mean, believing that there... I mean, I admit that there's a possibility. I take a scientific...
So you're an agnostic.
Reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's actually... It's a misconception of atheism to say that you can only be an atheist if you have declared absolutely that you have the answers and you know that there's no God. it's just an atheist has looked at all gods available and determined, no, none of these could exist, and probably there is no God. That's not really agnosticism. That's really atheism.
Well, I may then be an atheist myself. My father was an atheist, and my mother was an agnostic. And
I guess, but also when you encounter people who call themselves atheists, they tend to have a little bit more of a mission. And so it's easy to sort of say, well, you have a belief system because of something that's activating you. Whereas, like, I used to be that way. Like, I used to talk a lot about atheism, challenge people's theism, and I considered myself an atheist. And now I sort of, I don't even know what the hell I am, but I've lost interest in challenging people that way, but I sympathize with atheists. And then also I'm sort of in the RU camp where it's like, I really, to continue, like, universal self-criticism, I'm not going to, like, you know, dig in and say, here's what I know for sure about anything.
Well, Mr. Fleming, or Flemmy, as I like to call him.
You're bad.
I got to be on your team with this. It's kind of like if you don't believe in slavery, you can either sit at home and say, I don't believe in slavery, or you can be an abolitionist and say, no, wait a minute, we have this thing, and I am going to actively be against it. So let's kill God. We're atheists. Fuck them.
All right. Well, if he is there, kill him. That's
right.
Would be all right.
Let's get him.
If we can kill him, we could prove it.
I'm with the Flemster. Can I call you the Flemster?
Well, no. I'm probably misquoting you here, but I read, I think you said that, I think that knowledge is basically the enemy of faith, so you're basically encouraging people to seek knowledge. Is that correct?
Exactly. Doubt is the enemy of certainty. I mean, but what I want to do with the war on Easter is have Christians come across information that they're simply not getting because only one version is told. I mean, the church is always one public place where nobody's allowed to offer a contrary view.
Right.
So I want especially Christian children to know that there's a reason to doubt what they're being told. And doubt does kill faith because, well, if you really start, most faiths, if you really start examining what they're based on, you cannot deduce your way of believing in it. You have to eventually let it go.
Don't humans need mythology at this point in their evolutional development? I mean, even if there was no Jesus or Jeebus or any of them, don't they still need to believe in something at this point?
Whether humans need to band together in groups that have an identity, and whether they like to get together and experience stories, and whether some of them go too far and really, really love a story to the point they believe it, yeah, that's all true. And certainly something about humans has caused religion to develop. I mean, there had to be a cause, and there has to be something in us that makes us want it. But I think that we can, I see no reason that anyone's ever articulated that we should have it today. I mean, 2,000 years ago, I kind of get why they thought the way they did. They didn't have science. I mean, they were answering questions that we've already answered since then.
Dealing with,
you know, they thought that
the
demons caused disease.
Yes.
They don't.
At least
you,
the humors.
With higher, hiding.
So you've never had shingles.
Oh, yeah. That came from Jesus.
That is definitely from
Jesus. You're hiding these mind fucks and Easter eggs or whatever it is. Do you feel like up to this point maybe you're preaching to the unheavenly choir, and do you expect to reach people who are believers to get them to think?
He said the kids in church.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Have you had any evidence that people have been affected by your message who were not previously on your team?
Definitely. I get emails all the time. I mean, the movie has not worked alone, but has worked in concert with other things, such as Sam Harris's book, The End of Faith.
Yeah.
Right. I know it's been principally involved in the deconversion of many Christians, including one Baptist minister. So it definitely is possible to reach Christians. It's astonishing what they don't know. And then when you tell them, their jaws just drop. And when I see Christians after a screening of The God Who Wasn't There, and I see the looks on their faces, I can tell they've just never, ever been exposed to this stuff. It's astonishing, but they haven't.
Is it really astonishing? I mean, don't you associate... At this point, if you want to talk about activist atheism, I consider most Christians to be buffoons. Most of them are dullards and dolts, and so I wouldn't really be all that...
Well,
surprised by what they don't
know. Well, make
know.
Up your mind. Are they dullards, or are they dolts, or are
they
buffoons?
They bring to mind the phrase blind faith, I think.
They may be dopes.
Now,
now they're blind, too? Come on.
Okay, now let's not just pick on people.
I know.
Now,
well, there was a question there. Brian, do you want to defend the overall IQ quotient of Christians?
I think that many Christians are smart. I think you know, I think many Germans were smart in their minds about Heisenberg's horrible ideology, you know?
Yeah.
It happens, you know. Smart people can have their minds fooled by powerful ideologies. And really, the solution is conversation. It's opposing points of view. Well, is the solution.
When 90% of Americans believe in God, I mean, yeah, you have to sort of allow that there are some smart people who are believing in God. Not necessarily Jesus, but some
do
God.
You? Exactly. Do you really?
We need to talk to these kids about listening to emo records then. We need to have a conversation about that.
You think this is making them more inclined towards believing in God or...
listening to bad rock.
Oh, okay. They need
we
some
need to
help.
Talk to them.
All right, well, this is another campaign, actually.
Exactly.
This is a campaign for after Easter. The campaign
getting
to
rid
kill,
of Christian rock.
The campaign to kill emo. I want to ask you about your film. Did you spend a lot of time researching it, and did you start with your conclusion, or did you reach the conclusion, or how was that whole process?
No, I actually started out thinking the theory must have been a crackpot theory. I hadn't even heard of it, and then I ran across it, and I'm kind of into crackpot theories and into crackpots. I like to look at what makes them tick. And
that's why you're talking to us.
Yes.
Actually, blog isn't a crack and pot.
So I started looking into it, and then ultimately I came to realize that the evidence did stack up, and that the real crackpots were people who could look at early Christianity and determine that the early Christians, you know, believed in a human Jesus when they clearly didn't. So when I realized how few people knew about this, I decided that it was a good focus for a documentary.
Do you like reading the Bible? I mean, did you find it an interesting story? I mean, did you like, or like the Dan Brown book or Holy Blood, Holy Grail? Do you have a fascination with these kinds of mythologies and conspiracy theories and so forth around Jesus that so many people do?
Yeah, I think I like Jesus as a character. I mean, there's so many different Jesuses, but many of them I do like. I certainly can see how the Bible can be used, certain stories in the Bible can be used to teach children. And you know, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that, you know, there's a lot of horrible stuff, but there's some good stuff in there too. So I appreciate that it has value and that the Jesus character has some value. It's unfortunately, also in the Bible is lots of terrible stuff about how great war is and how good genocide is and how we should kill all the gay people. So you know, when people, especially fundamentalist Christians, are absolutely certain that the Bible is completely unerring in any way, they've got to take all that bad stuff with the good stuff.
What about baby Jesus? You think the whole Jesus mythology jumped the shark with the whole baby Jesus thing?
I don't know what you mean.
We were just talking about baby Jesus before. None of us do either.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, I've been thinking about baby Jesus lately, and I can't understand what it all means.
All right. I'm turning your mic off.
All right.
I have a question, actually, Brian, though. There was a study recently that showed that you know, belief in God or religion makes people happier.
Oh, yes.
Now, assuming that they can actually measure something called happiness, might there not be a benefit to believing, even if you don't believe? You know, like just to be happier.
I would say that the same benefit to heroin.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah. Not as good as heroin.
You're killing your case here, Brian.
So you spoke a moment ago.
There's a cost to being rational. There's a cost to looking at the world in a sensible way and not falling prey to fantasy stories that make you feel better. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, but if it
it's certainly not easier. I'll admit that, and it certainly takes more courage. So people who are afraid and just want to trick their minds into being happy should turn to religion and drugs, because you know you do have to be strong to deal with the world as it is.
It's kind of like that brain in a vat story, though. Like, if you could climb into a chamber and never experience reality and just be told that this is reality and it makes you happy, would you do it? I mean, what's the difference? If you've convinced yourself that you're happy, you're happy, right?
It's the blue pill and the red pill.
Exactly.
Ooh. Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. So
before we die, we'll have that. We'll be able to jack into the Matrix that way.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Actually, that's an interesting thing I thought about religion before. It seems like someday we might invent the technology to do that.
Yeah,
I understand.
And part of the reason we haven't is because religion has held back science so much for centuries. It has not been allowed to make progress. So, ironically, religion has kept us from having eternal life.
I understand that there's a cluster of neurons in the brain, actually, that tap people into their feeling of belief in God or their sense of God. Have you looked at that at all?
No, but Sam Harris, who's in my movie, is devoting his PhD thesis, I guess, to exactly that. He's studying with a fMRI, functional magnetic resonance
right.
imaging
mm-hmm.
technology, the brain basis for belief. So he hasn't revealed anything yet because he hasn't published it yet, but I know he's discovered some things. I can't wait to find out what they are.
And in your film, you have an interview with Sam Harris and, the guy who wrote The Selfish Gene, Richard Dawkins, actually. Wasn't it
Dawkins is on the commentary track, yeah.
Yeah, Dawkins, he was one of the first people who started speaking recently about starting a movement of atheists. Is that right?
He's definitely at the forefront, yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, he's another atheist who would never tell you he knows all the answers. He calls
right.
himself an atheist, but he doesn't claim to have absolute certainty about everything in the world.
And also, he was the inventor of the notion of memes, which is very popular among some sort and considered a form of faith, but not a form of science. He doesn't himself believe in it in any absolute sense, I don't think. Have you followed that discussion at all?
Yeah, actually, when I was interviewing him, I kept asking him about the selfish gene, and eventually he said, how come you're asking me about a book that was published so long ago?
Right.
He wanted to talk more about his more recent books. But that book had such a deep influence on me. This is all I really wanted to talk to him about.
How seriously do you take the idea that America is in or headed into theocracy? And, of course, now there's a book by Kevin Phillips, the great Republican critic of the Bushes, the Republican who hates the Bushes, talking about America becoming a theocracy. How far along do you think we are, and do you think we'll go the rest of the way?
I think that we will go the rest of the way if we don't stop it. If we don't take action to stop it, if we don't call it what it is while it's happening, we will. So unfortunately, that's going to require a few people to go out on a limb. If theocracy is going to take over, by the time everybody's admitting it, it's going to be way too late to do anything about it. So even the time to act is now before we reach a point of no return. But I definitely think we're headed there. There's really no question that we're headed in that direction if the Republicans can get what they want.
Well, to a great extent in our culture, everybody is screaming actually about the Quran and about Islam. And how would you compare the mimetic nastiness of Islam to the mimetic nastiness of Christianity?
The Quran is certainly more vicious, more clear about killing that has to be done, and in general, a more dangerous book. It's just got all sorts of stuff about what you must do to infidels and how they must be treated, which is, of course, cutting them into pieces and throwing them into a fire kind of things, than the Bible does. The Bible has some of that stuff, but there's also Jesus saying, making all this happy talk. The Quran is just really clear that if you believe in Islam, you really do believe that the infidels have their place in the world is either to be subjugated or killed. And frankly, if you don't believe that and you call yourself a Muslim, you're really not a Muslim. So I do think that Islam is potentially more dangerous than Christianity, but really any religion like that, especially monotheistic religion, if it gains enough power, Judaism could be, if it ever gained the kind of power that Islam or Christianity has, they all could be extremely dangerous.
Well, before we let you go, let's bring it back around to this plot to destroy Easter. And how can listeners to the Are You Serious show help you to bring down this bunny rabbit holiday?
Well, I would encourage everyone listening to go to waroneaster.org and click there to find out how you can participate in the war. You can get a free DVD by doing certain actions. And so, go there and download the flyers and participate in the war. That's the best way I think that you can help.
And boycott Islamic bake sales, too, because you never know.
Just in case.
You might be eating a heretic in a brownie.
Right. And don't eat any Danish, either.
Don't act like you've never eaten a heretic.
On a total sidebar, Brian, what's up with Bat Boy? Are we going to see a movie soon?
Or? Ooh, Bat Boy.
What's Bat Boy?
Yeah,
a fabulous
John
musical.
John Landis is going to direct the Bat Boy movie.
Fantastic.
And he's trying to cast right now, and it's kind of in that phase where they're trying to get, you know, big names in it, so everything's very hush-hush. I don't even hear certain things about what he's doing. But, you know, I'm confident that he'll get a good cast together, and I hope he starts shooting a movie pretty soon.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to it.
All right. I want to thank Brian Fleming for joining us and for putting on this important war against Easter. All right. Thanks again, Brian.
Yeah, thanks. It's been great talking to you guys.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
We'd like to thank Brian Fleming for joining us in the studio today. Next week, our guest will be Black Dahlia of the Dwarves. Thanks for listening, and don't be afraid of the dark.
Love is the only weapon. Shit!